Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 2 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Welcome to the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Trish.
And this is our podcast. We talk about wrestling news and various topics from different promotions, primarily AEW, but also New Japan Pro Wrestling, WWE, and topics from around the wrestling world. Whatever we find interesting, and we hope you will too. We are a proud member of the Social Suplex Podcast Network, and you can find our content on our podcast feed, the Social Suplex Podcast feed, as well as on Twitter and YouTube. Please feel free to like, subscribe, and rate our podcast. It is Friday, June 28th, 2024, at least in some countries, and you are welcomed to episode 20B. Yes, it's another B episode, and you know what that means. It's a special one. Trish, what are we doing tonight?
So we've spent a lot of time discussing wrestling media and potentially a lot of time our frustrations with it. But if we are going to discuss this subject, we probably need to talk to someone who actually works with it in our day-to-day. And I couldn't think of anyone better to do this with. And after some bullying, we've managed to get Brian Alvarez to agree to speak to us today. So welcome, Brian.
Have you seen my Twitter? You guys aren't even in the same universe as the bullying I get on a daily basis.
I don't know. You should wait till we're done before you say that.
Oh, that's true. I guess I should wait. I doubt it could be worse.
I don't know.
That's very true.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
No, it's obviously we're both long-time observer, subscribers, listeners, and you know, we really appreciate your time. For those that don't know, and you probably have to be living under a rock or on a mountain to do so, Brian is the host of, let's see if I can get all these in one go. Probably won't.
Good luck.
Thank you. So the Brian and Vinny Show, Figure Four Daily. I'm going to do this completely wrong. Wrestling Observer with Radio with Dave Meltzer. And have I missed any, Brian? I'm probably
Wrestling Observer Live with Mike.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Filthy Four with Filthy Tom.
See, I knew I was going to mess it up.
I think that's it.
That's okay. So yeah, so we're just going to get right into this. And the whole idea of this is to have more of a discussion around kind of wrestling media and the role of it and the future of it, rather than kind of just talking within our own echo chamber. So Sarah, let's begin.
Cool. So I think the easiest way to kind of kick this off, Brian, is because, you know, we talk about dudes and dude podcasters a lot on our show. And so we finally have a dude podcaster to talk to, which we're pretty excited about. And I feel like you could also be described as like the do podcaster, like the original one. I guess my question for you is, when you first started with Figure Four and Figure Four Online, and then when you joined up with Dave and the Wrestling Observer, did you have like an idea as to what you wanted to do? Was it like a proactive vision on your part?
Well, I mean, what I always wanted to do was radio. Well, I shouldn't say just radio, but I, you know, when I was young, I loved writing, and I just thought I'm going to grow up and be a writer. And that was like my main goal when I was a kid. And then, you know, when I was a teenager, I started watching wrestling. Started watching WWF, and I loved it. And, you know, there's a kind of thing where a lot of the stuff that I'm interested in, you know, I want to do it. So, you know, I really wanted to become a wrestler, and there was no avenues back then, really. I mean, you couldn't just, I mean, nowadays, I mean, you can go to any wrestling school anywhere. And it was much more difficult in, you know, 1993, I guess it would have been. Actually, even earlier than that. But so, you know, we did our backyard wrestling, and I did that for many years. And I've told the story many times, but we ran shows in a gymnastics facility, and we had a financial backer, and he had a lot of money, and he thought this had a lot of potential. And so he would finance a lot of things. And one of the things he financed was a paper newsletter about our promotion, the Youth Wrestling Federation. And so he paid to have these things printed and sent out to people that were interested for free. And long story short, we had to stop doing our promotion for insurance reasons. And I still had this mailing list. And I just graduated high school. And, you know, I was thinking, what am I going to do with my life? You know, my dad ran a business. I'd worked, you know, a lot of different places. But, you know, I really wanted my own business. And so I thought, well, you know, I love writing, so I could be a writer. Maybe I could find a way to monetize, you know, all of this stuff that I love. And so I came up with this idea of Figure Four Weekly. And this was 1995. And at that point, I don't think I'd ever heard of The Observer. I'd never heard of The Torch. I only knew PWI Weekly. And PWI Weekly was like a four-page newsletter. And like two pages were news, and the entire inside were all these results from around the world. And I was like, God, I don't care about results. Like, it should just be four pages of news. And so I thought, you know what? I could do this. I could do this better. And so I started Figure Four Weekly. And I had no idea what I was doing. I went to the library. I bought a bunch of business books. I bought a bunch of books about journalism. And I just like read all these books to try to figure out what I was doing. And around that same time, I was also listening to Art Bell, his radio program. Absolutely loved it. And so like usual, I love it. I want to do it. But there was no avenue for that. And so in 1999, it's actually 98, I talked to Dave. I faxed him. I was too scared to call. And I said, hey, you know, you've got an opening on the Observer hotline. By then, I'd been reading the Observer for a few years. And I had had my own hotline that I had done that failed. And so I said, you know, you've got an opening here. Could I be on the hotline? And he goes, yeah. And so I started doing his 900 line a couple days a week. And so when IATA started, you know, he did the first IATA show, which was over the air, you know, it was on the internet. For those of you that don't know IATA, you know, it was Bob Meyerowitz started it. They had offices in New York City. They spent like $30 million. Nobody had the capacity to listen to these shows. So they enlisted him. He did like one show by himself for 2 hours. And he goes, man, I need a co-host. Which, if you know Dave, is funny because he could have easily done that for 2 hours by himself. But anyway, he asked me, and I was like, my God. So I can write about wrestling. I can be a wrestler, which is what I was doing also at the time. And I could do a radio show. It was like the greatest thing that could possibly happen to me. So I started doing IATA with him, and really the rest is history. You know, we've been together in one way or another ever since. But yeah, I was always interested in those things, wrestling, writing, and radio. And I managed to do all of them.
Do you see yourself as a journalist?
I mean, I guess. It's, you know, when people ask me, you know, what do you do that don't know me, it always makes me feel uncomfortable because I don't know what I'm supposed to say. You try to read all these podcasts and, you know, I tell them I work in media and then, you know, if they get more into it, I explain I got a podcast or whatever. But, you know, I never looked at myself really, like I would never label myself a journalist. But when I started doing the newsletter, I mean, you know, very quickly I realized, well, I got to kind of be a journalist. And I'd never gone to school. And so what I did was I taught myself how to be a journalist. And, you know, that involved reading a lot of books and you know, learning a lot from Dave, who actually is a journalist. You know, he actually got a degree. So, you know, he's taught me a lot and I've learned a lot on the fly. And I also, you know, try to learn a lot from criticism of what I do and others do. You know, people, they'll go, you know, I'd have to have an example, but I mean, you know, people are very critical of things. And, you know, sometimes when people are critical, it's like you jump to the defense immediately, especially on the internet. And, you know, I've always felt that, you know, there's two types of criticism. There's a type of criticism where these people don't know what they're talking about, in which case you should probably just ignore it. And then there's a type of criticism where, you know, they're right. And so, you know, I've made a lot of mistakes over the years. I've screwed up a lot of things. But instead of getting angry about it, I do try to learn from it and see like, okay, what did I do? What should I have done in that situation? And so I guess I sort of feel like a journalist now. I try to do journalism the best I can, which in wrestling is very hard, but I do try.
Do you feel like, you know, when you say there's a lot of noise, like anybody who's in the public like yourself, and this is true for wrestlers too, there's so much noise and criticism in the noise. Do you find it difficult to break out what is valid versus what is kind of bullshit? Or is that something that's gotten easier over time? How do you approach that?
Well, I can't say that I'm always right, obviously, because, you know, anytime someone writes something on the internet, it's like all you're reading is these words. And you can't see the person who wrote it. You don't know what they look like. You don't know, you know, how they would have said the words. It's just words. But I do feel that I can usually start reading and pretty quickly figure out, is this in good faith or not? And, you know, a lot of it, I mean, if you look at my Twitter mentions, most of it is not good faith. If you go on our board, I would say that I think the majority of it is good faith. And I think that you can really easily just, I mean, sometimes I can see a username and it's like, I'm not going to read this one. even if it isn't good faith, like you lost your a long time ago. So yeah. I do kind of feel, and also a lot of it is just inside. Like I can read criticism and I feel like a lot of times I can say, you know what, that is right. That they are correct. Even if I don't like them, like they're right about that. But the one that's really the hardest is, to deal with is criticism where they're wrong, but they're not trolling. They just don't understand. And sometimes when people get angry about something and they don't understand the circumstances, and for certain reasons, I can't really explain the circumstances for various reasons. That's what's hardest. Cause then they get mad. Like, you know, why are you not saying what you, it's like, I can't. So that's the hardest really.
So you mentioned the kind of development of the internet kind of thing there. You know, you've been doing this a long time now. You've seen a lot of changes in kind of wrestling media. How has your coverage changed during the time that you've been doing it?
How much of my coverage has changed?
Oh, just, yeah. And how have you been able to adapt to kind of the new mediums or new outlets in terms of even something like the internet or YouTube or anything like that?
Well, I think the most difficult thing is finding out, like, how do you sustain, you know, a business model that has completely changed? I mean, before, you know, when everyone just got print newsletters, it's like it was all about scoops, really. I mean, if you look at a lot of the very, very early observers, I mean, Dave wasn't really known for his bios and history pieces really until later. It was a lot of news, like you'd get results of what was happening in a different territory that you didn't know about. You would get, you know, this is why such and such angle happened. It was all about news. And I think the big thing nowadays is, you know, people get all hung up on, you know, who broke the story and breaking news and everything like that. And I mean, to me, I don't think you can really sustain on breaking news, because on the internet, it's like, as soon as you break a story, it's everywhere. Like it's everywhere. And, you know, to me, one of the big strengths of the site and what I think is kind of the way we need to focus is, you know, if let's say I found out that Tony Khan fell down and broke his leg. Someone texts me right now.
Okay. I'm going to get aggregated now.
I send it to the front page. They do subscriber exclusive, you know, Tony Khan breaks leg. But then that's, you already spoiled it in there in the headline. Or, you know, I put it up on my subscriber Twitter. You know, I heard Tony Khan broke his leg. It's all over the internet 10 seconds later. It's like, what have I really accomplished with that scoop, really? That I was first? Like, the thing, what's going to get people to pay for this content? I feel that it's now less about what are the scoops and more about, okay, Sika died. Dave's got 10,000 words on Sika. Okay, that's not something that's just going to be on the internet. The story that Sika died is on the internet 10 seconds later. But, you know, who's going to give you the best bio of Sika? Well, that's going to be Dave. And then, you know, there's a Dynamite show. Get the Dynamite results anywhere. You can watch it yourself. But, you know, what can I tell you about my thoughts on the Dynamite show? Can I tell you about why I think something was a good decision, a bad decision? I mean, NXT with Javon, I just think it's so stupid. And I don't feel like people get why it's stupid. So, like, I can spend some time on that on a podcast. And I feel like if like, wrestling journalism is going to survive, I mean, it's got to kind of be sort of like, you're really paying for the long-form journalism, the podcast of the journalism. Less so, hey, here's the scoop. We had it first. Who cares? It doesn't matter anymore.
Well, this is, you know, this is part of the changing landscape. Like you said, the internet means that everyone has these things immediately, and that there's this kind of constant news drive. There's this constant need for scoops. There's this constant, like you said, if it's scoops based, then you have to be providing them constantly. And that becomes sort of increasingly difficult, especially, you know, I think we've seen, you know, more of a lockdown on stuff in the last year or so. You know, is that something that, you know, has affected your business as you've figured this out? Like, how are you, you know, you talked about offering more analysis. Do you anticipate changing your business model more moving forward? Are you constantly thinking about this? Or is this something that you're kind of like, all right, this is my goal for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
Well, I think that, you know, long-term, who knows long-term? I mean, I have absolutely no earthly idea. I mean, I don't know if people will just stop reading altogether, or they don't want to listen to podcasts anymore. Or, I mean, to me, it's like I am always looking for the scoops, but it's not even so much like, okay, well, here's a scoop, you know, so-and-so might be on the pay-per-view tomorrow. Okay, well, that's whatever. But, you know, there's so many stories. Like, I always read on the internet, like, oh, who are the guys that really break the scoops? Well, you know, it's Fightful and, you know, Mike Johnson and I never see my name. And, like, I don't really get mad about it because I don't care because I'm not really in it for scoops. But if you actually listen to the shows, like, there's so much stuff that I talk about on the shows that are really scoops. But because they're not presented in such a way, I think that they're sort of the work that I do to try to figure out what's going on everywhere is very much overlooked, which, again, you know, I'm fine with it. It's just kind of funny. But, like, I feel like I've done a really good job in explaining a lot of the stuff that's been going on with AEW over the last couple of years. And, you know, there is so much to talk about. There's so much I have talked about. And I don't really know why. I don't know if I should say it's not acknowledged or whatever. But, I mean, I feel like I've broken more in the last 2 years than I probably ever have in my life. And, you know, because it's not disseminated in a certain way, I feel like people feel like, well, there really are no scoops. He's just talking about what he thinks about the shows. I think part of that is because the clips that end up on the internet on YouTube are usually some rant I did about something on a show. And you kind of get this reputation, even though I do a lot more than rant about stupid things on shows.
A lot of this is driven by the explosion in kind of aggregation. And when they do aggregate, it's very much selective. So, for example, like Wade Keller at the Torch never gets aggregated for anything that he does either. But sometimes when they aggregate, especially your audio, they miss kind of some really important things like tone. I think we've talked about being kind of Dave translators where we spotted things just off his tone alone. But it also sets the table for news. And if there's a correction, you know, that never gets enough coverage afterwards. You know, how
I'll
do
give you a good example. I don't want to interrupt, but I mean, example is, so on Raw Monday, like, Pat McAfee is not there, okay? And Michael Cole says, you know, Pat McAfee's not here tonight, but don't read anything into it. And earlier in the day, they'd had the Pat McAfee show, and they'd had the Wyatts. The Wyatt Six had done some cut-in or whatever. And then, you know, the package that showed up for Pat McAfee was addressed to Pat McAfee. And the way that Michael Cole said it, you know, maybe I said it in a way that was like, you know, this is what happened. But I mean, I thought I made it clear that this seems to be an angle. I mean, they've been doing an angle with Pat McAfee and the Wyatt Six. And then the way that Michael Cole explained it, I mean, it totally came off as an angle. So, you know, the next day it turns out that Pat McAfee's father-in-law passed away. So then, of course, everybody puts out the clip of us talking about how, you know, it appears to be an angle, and then, oh, they're wrong, and et cetera, and I'm sure there'll be no correction. So on Observer Live, I mean, the first thing I did on the show is I explained, okay, Pat McAfee's father passed away, and this is what happened last night. This is why I thought it was an angle, et cetera, et cetera. And that clip ended up nowhere. Like, nobody acknowledged the fact that we talked about it afterwards. And this happens all the time. Like, people will go back and find, oh boy, got him there. And then when there is a correction or et cetera, I mean, that never goes out. So it is kind of difficult in that way because, you know, there is a probably a large proportion of the internet audience that are like, yeah, these guys, they make mistakes all the time. And they never offer corrections. They're terrible journalists, which is what happens when only bits and pieces of everything go out.
Well, I think that's kind of a challenge with audio versus print. You know, print's so easy to read and something you can, you know, access so quickly and can share quickly. Whereas I feel with audio, there's a context to it. And I feel like, especially, you know, for audio where, like Trish said, tone is so important, you kind of have to get to know the person you're listening to so you can pick up on some of that smaller stuff. Sure. It's definitely something that I feel like is unfair because I think, you know, Trish and I've seen that happen a few times and we've talked about it in terms of like what people choose to get annoyed about versus what they don't choose to get annoyed about. I think it's definitely something that's confused us because that kind of stuff, like to me, it I don't know.
So the Observer actually cut back on running kind of Twitter clips. Was that a choice made because of the way that people were reacting to them or pulling them into different contexts?
I will be perfectly honest and tell you, I have no idea. I mean, you know, when I first started doing, you know, audio, I was a big fan of Art Bell. And one of the things I thought was so cool besides his show was the fact that he did the entire thing by himself. And so he did it from his house and he took all the calls. He ran the board, like he did everything, which like nobody does in radio. And so when I started, it was like, oh, I'm going to do the same thing. And, you know, even though we do byline and they've got a call screener and they could take the calls there, like I did all the calls myself. Like I always was like, I'm controlling all of this. And there was a period, actually quite a while ago, where I realized, what am I doing? This is ridiculous. And, you know, what I need to do, especially when we expanded, you know, it's like, I know there's stuff I'm good at. I know there's stuff I'm not good at. Anything, like when people get mad at me about something on the website, like, dude, I have nothing to do with that. Someone gets mad at me about some of the boards doing, I got nothing to do with that. I don't, like, put the clips on YouTube. I don't choose the headlines. I don't put the clips up on Twitter. Like, as far as his video setup here, I didn't do anything. I couldn't tell you what that camera is right there. I couldn't tell you, like, what this big light here is. I don't know anything about it. So, yeah, I'm not sure why we don't have the clips on Twitter anymore. Like, one day I found out that we had, like, what do you call it? It's the thing the kids use, the, you know, the quick, not Vine, the other one?
TikTok.
It's like one day we had a TikTok. And they're like, TikTok. My mom's like, I'm following you on TikTok. I was like, what? And all these clips are on TikTok. And then, you know, one day someone just brought up, you know, how come you're not on TikTok anymore? I was like, we're not? And I go up and there's like been no new TikTok videos for like 2 months or something. And so I had no idea. So I talked to them. I think they're back now. I probably should know more, but my brain has limited capacity.
So is there a tension between trying to grow a business and providing good coverage and good wrestling journalism? And if there is, how do you handle that?
Well, you know, all I have ever done is just concentrate on doing a good job with the business. Somebody used, and I've seen it more and more, so I guess it's like a new term, but I'm old. Now, somebody on the board, I can't even do it. I can't even say what they really said, but it was like something like, you know, they said a certain thing for the aggregation or whatever. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I have never done a rant, reviewed something, anything with the idea that, well, this one is going to go viral or, you know, this one's going to do good numbers on YouTube. If anything, it's like, it's funny. I will, like when the Wyatt Six debuted, I was on the Twitch chat, and you know, I was getting ready to do the review show the next day, and like as soon as the chat opens, everyone's like, "Oh my god, we're gonna get a good one today, man! He's just gonna go nuts on the Wyatt Six. Guy had a giant mallet." You know, they're all excited, and I was just like, "Man, I'm just gonna let everybody down here because I wasn't mad about it." So I can't like false, you know, anger, fury, make up a rant, whatever. It's like, I don't know what's going to come out. I don't know what I'm going to get mad about and what I'm not. I don't put them up on YouTube. I mean, there is zero, you know, I got to grow the business. So I got to really get after, you know, like people go, you know, the best way to try to get, you know, listenership is bury AW and bury Dave. Like it's a conscious business decision. I have never, not once ever done anything like that. Because I can't, it would not be, like I can't do an hour or 2 hours or whatever being totally full of it. I mean, it has to be genuine. Otherwise I'm like, I don't play a character. Like I got a friend that works in NXT and I get so mad about that Javon thing. And he goes, "You're being a gimmick." Like he doesn't believe I'm sincere. Like he thinks I'm being a gimmick about it, and I'm not. It's just, that's how I feel. So no, I don't go out of my way to, you know, try to build the business through, you know, certain rants or whatever. I figure if we do a good job, that's what's going to help build the business. So I try to do a good job. I don't always screw up a lot, actually, but I try.
There's been a real distinct focus on wrestling media this year. You know, when it comes from things like the co-opted journalism stuff with the Fast Nationals, or even coverage of the Janelle Grant case, which, you know, is a very challenging thing to cover. You know, how difficult do you find covering stories like that?
The Vince McMahon, Janelle Grant thing has just been like the bane of my existence, because how I feel, my role is to be like a journalist. I know that, you know, in this situation, let me put it this way. Okay. You know, there's certain things that I do. You know, when we reviewed Nitro, I mean, it's like we're reviewing an old show. It sucks, you know, bury it or whatever. Have some fun. I do a lot of jokes here and there, but like, this is a real serious, important story. And it's not something to joke about. This is not something to do, you know, like why didn't Brian rant about Janelle Grant? Like he ranted about Hell in a Cell 2019 with the mallet. It's like, that's just, it's confuses me when I get that reaction. I feel that my job on a really serious story is to do the best I can to cover it in a journalistic manner. And I feel that in that particular case, there is so much dislike for Vince McMahon that people have decided, and believe me, I am no fan of Vince McMahon. They have decided that, well, he's guilty. And so everything that comes out about this case, they fit to their, you know, their decision that they have made that he's guilty. And to me, it's like, you know, obviously he wrote the text messages. I mean, there's a lot about this case that, I mean, it's pretty clear it's factual, but there's a lot of things that we don't know. And to me, it would actually do a disservice to make like declarations about things that we actually don't know. Like there's so much stuff that we do know that like, that's my job to talk about what we do know and not rant and rave and, you know, try Vince McMahon. I'm not the judge. I'm not the jury. I'm not the executioner. I'm just trying to tell you like, this is what's happening in the story. And it's made people very, very angry. I've had a lot of people very angry that you're not going harder on Vince. You're not going harder on Triple H. You know, it's like, well, I mean, we don't know anything about Triple H. I mean, all these presumptions, he must have known. He must have this. Maybe he did, but also maybe he didn't. We don't know. And I've tried very hard to just like right down the middle. This is what we know. This is what we don't know. And, you know, that's it. Like, that's all I know. So that's how I'm trying to report on the story. And I've had people very upset. We've had people quit. They want something that they're not going to get, at least from me. So it's just, I don't know any other way to cover it than to just try to explain what we know and what we don't know.
Is this something that, you know, as you've gotten the feedback, and you talked earlier about getting feedback, is this something that as you've gotten feedback and people have been frustrated, and I think, you know, you've talked about employees and listeners, and other people, have you considered, you know, hey, do I need to change my approach about this? Are you worried about the impact of the choices you make in covering this on your business and your subscriber base? Or is this something that you're, like you said, you're just kind of, I have to do what I have to do?
Well, I mean, there's always the thought about, you know, how does this affect, I don't want people to quit, et cetera. But at the same time, it's like, I have to do what the job is. And, you know, if you have decided that Triple H knew about everything and he's guilty, I mean, yeah, maybe I'll make some people happy by saying that I believe that or it's true or whatever. But I mean, I don't know that. I don't know if that's true. I don't know anything. And so I can't do that. Like, even if people are going to leave over it, like, I can't do that. I don't know. And I feel that that's the responsible thing to do. Even if people want something different, it's like, I don't know. I mean, that's it. I'm trying to do the right thing by, you know.
Is this sort of like a conflict struggle in the fact that, you know, I don't, you know, you're someone who does, as you said, get scoops, but you're not necessarily doing, you know, investigative journalism, you know, like the Wall Street Journal or somebody else would do on a case like this?
Well, I have not done as well as other people have done in terms of the investigative journalism. You know, some people have devoted, like, you know, their whole, like, this is what they're doing. This is like their beat. And I think that part of the issue is, like, I can't really make it my beat because I've got so many things that I want to cover and that the readership is expecting me to cover. Like, you know, the idea that I will, like, some people want me to not talk about WWE. Like, you cannot talk about WWE, or, you know, we don't want to hear anything positive about WWE because of all this negativity involved. And it's like, I mean, I can't do that. Like, if they have a good pay-per-view, it was a good pay-per-view. I mean, if I thought it was good, it was good. I can't, you know, every show, don't talk about any news except what's the latest on Vince McMahon and Janelle Grant. I mean, when there's news, we'll talk about it. And, you know, when there's a down period, like there is right now, then I do have to cover all of the other stuff. So I haven't really, I don't have the resources to only focus on that. And, you know, some people have done a great job, you know, focusing on that. And, you know, I've talked about what they've found and et cetera, but, you know, I can't add anything that I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think also there's this other thing where, like, I think some people think that I know more than I do. Like, you know, just because I've been covering it forever, there's like, well, he has to know that Triple H. Like, I don't have any idea. And I think there's that, well, you know, I must have heard something or whatever. And, you know, I mean, I haven't. And, you know, really, I just haven't. I mean, I'm not hiding anything.
I think there is a frustration amongst a section of the fan base. And, you know, this probably goes inside the industry at times as well, that kind of cases like this haven't led to kind of a discussion on the culture of wrestling or how it can be improved. And we have seen a series of stories kind of that have covered abuses of power to a varying degree in recent years. How do you view the current culture of pro wrestling?
Well, you know, it's the Vince's issues. I mean, they date back like a long time. I mean, as far as we know, at least the mid 80s and probably, you know, even before that. But again, I don't know, other than what we know from, you know, Rita Chatterton and on. And, you know, I started wrestling on the indies in 1998, and I was pretty much done in 2010. And then, you know, me and Filthy started going back It's probably about 2017, 2018, I think it was. And what I know is that the culture that I saw in 1998 compared to the culture that I saw in 2018 was like so night and day. It was so night and day. And I'm not saying that in 2018 there weren't, because obviously there were, you know, people that unsavory characters, et cetera. But, you know, in general, you know, it's like in 1998, I didn't want to leave my bag anywhere. I didn't trust anybody in the locker room except maybe Vinny. Nobody. My best friend Buddy would have like cut up my trunks and what, I mean, I didn't trust anybody. And then, you know, I did a couple of shows in 2018 and it was like, I can leave my bag and my wallet in the back and go out and come back and not worry about it. And I think that people don't want to believe that things are so much better now than they have been in the past. And I think that part of this is that, you know, in the Janelle Grant lawsuit, it was like Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, and the WWE. And so, you know, there are a lot of people that they don't like Vince McMahon. They don't like John Laurinaitis. They don't like WWE. And so, you know, I keep seeing like, you know, it's all of WWE. Like it's not just Vince. It's not just Laurinaitis. It's all of WWE. And that to me is another one of those things where it's not all of WWE. It's not. There's so many good people working there that have never done anything in their lives. And I shouldn't say never done anything, but you know what I'm saying? Like they've never been involved in something like this. And, you know, they didn't know about it. They didn't know about it to this degree. I mean, with Vince McMahon, it's like, yes, everybody knew that he was unfaithful to Linda. Like everybody knew that. And, you know, I'm sure that there were people that figured out something's going on with this Vince and Janelle Grant. But, you know, people are insistent, some people, that everybody knew everything that she is accusing him of and they helped cover it up. And it permeates the entire company. And do I believe that there is nobody in that company that should be out right now? I don't have any proof of anything, but I don't believe it. I believe there are probably some people there still who should be gone. I don't believe it is completely cleaned up. But at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and say, man, you know, thank God, I won't even say a person's name. Thank God so-and-so is hurt because, God, they're just part of the problem. You know, I'm probably not part of the problem. And I think that the wrestling business as a whole today is probably in many ways the best it's ever been. I'm not saying it's necessarily good or like great compared to a normal, but I don't know, you know, but you know, based on things that have happened in the past, I mean, we have made gigantic steps across all wrestling companies with, you know, the health of the performers and taking care of people and, you know, attempting to weed out problems. Is it perfect? No, but you know, I think it is a lot better now. And I think one of the big catalysts actually was, you know, Chris Benoit when he murdered his family. I mean, you can look at, yeah, was WWE perfect afterwards? Absolutely not. There were a lot of horrible things going on. But, you know, if you look at the way that they treated their performers and other human beings before and after Benoit, I mean, there were positive changes made. And, you know, that does trickle down. And I saw it in 2018 when I went in those locker rooms and I was like, these are actually some nice people that are working here. These are some nice, genuine people who are trying to go out and have a good show for fans and they want to give them their money's worth. And I did not feel like that in 1998 at all.
Switching gears a little bit, have you say, I mean, obviously we're in about 5 years since AEW has come along and obviously with Vince McMahon, you know, out of the picture and coming back and out of the picture again.
Actually, can I interrupt you real quick? What do you guys think of the coverage so far?
Damn it.
No, tell me, because I want to know.
My, you know, I've said this to you elsewhere, but I think that the coverage improved as it went on. I think you did listen to a lot of the feedback in terms of the amount of detail that people really wanted to see when news events did happen. And, you know, yeah, we gave you that feedback. I think it's difficult. It's a difficult balance. And there is a tendency to rush to certain conclusions. I agree with that. But I do think there is an element of wanting kind of wrestling as a workplace to be more on the level of other workplaces that have had to adapt quite quickly and also have a hierarchy. So both Sarah and myself work in very male-dominated industries where this is a thing. And, you know, even when I speak to people that do work in the industry, it's still a case of where that hierarchy can sometimes prevent progress is how they feel.
I think, like Trish said, I think the coverage has gotten better. And I do think one of the things I appreciate the most, you know, is that you and Dave also are people willing to like, hey, here's my board, here's my listeners, let me hear the criticism and take it into account. I do think there's maybe more of a happy medium between I don't know if this is going on and I just can tell you a fact. You know, I think there's maybe some more conversations about culture and stuff like that. And I think one of the challenges as you get older, and I'm speaking of myself significantly here, not just you, is that you see how much progress there has been. And you're like, hey, shouldn't you be happy? There's been so much progress without realizing that there's younger people who are like, it still sucks. Like, we'd like it to be better than it is.
I think that's absolutely part of this because I have, you know, it's not just like I covered it or I saw it like, no, I was not in WWE. No, I am not in AEW. No, I was not in WTNA. But I was in the business. I did shows. I ran across these people. I mean, I have been in many locker rooms. And to me, it's like I was in locker rooms in two generations. And if you were only in a locker room in this generation, then yeah, I bet you probably do see things a lot differently than I do. Because, you know, I would go back and wrestle today. I wasn't afraid of killing myself. But, like, if you said, hey, I can give you a time machine, you can go back and wrestle in 98 against, I don't want to do that. I don't want to deal with those people. I didn't like those people. Like, I have a lot of bitterness towards a lot of things during that period, not just involving me, but involving other people. I mean, it was a bad, bad period. And, you know, and covering it as well. I mean, you know, the days of under 40 deaths, I mean, that used to be, I mean, I remember I would wake up every day. I'd tell my wife, I'd go, I got to see if anybody died today. Wasn't even like a joke. It was like, okay, who died today? And, you know, having lived through all of that and then seeing where we are today, it's like, it has come so far. And we are in a time where Vince McMahon is not involved in this business at all. I mean, he is completely, totally out. And are there other people from that era that are still working in this business? Yes. Should all of them be? Like I said, I'm skeptical about some of them. I won't mention one name. I just don't want to mention this name. But it is a name that people are like, he had to know. He's got to know and help. And like, I don't think I've ever said one nice thing about this person ever, ever. But I still can't say I think he knew because I don't. But there are people who I don't know, but I strongly think this business would be a better place if they weren't in it. But I don't have anything that would bring them down. So no, it's not perfect, but yes, I do see it from the perspective of, yeah, it's so much better now.
I think the other difficulty with this is that we're in a period of increased tribalism amongst the fan base, and that's kind of reflected in society as well. We see people more gravitate to a side and kind of an echo chamber. But this has also led to kind of a want to give yourself your own media and distrust in a larger media. And this also plays into journalists of established sites, papers being kind of targeted, you know. And, you know, wrestling has always been a kind of secret society in some ways. The relationship between journalists and wrestlers has not always been strong. You know, dirt sheets is a term for that. but this seems to have increased in recent years, it feels like. You know, you were targeted quite heavily last year. And how does that affect...
Which one? Which time?
I can't even
tell you which one you're talking about.
Okay, so the one that we were referring to would be the Dax Harwood thing. And because that's probably the one that had the most coverage. How difficult is that to deal with in this kind of age of tribalism, and how much does it affect your business?
I couldn't tell you how it affects business, but I mean, tribalism is the worst. I mean, it is just the worst because it makes everything, I mean, just, it's hard to even attempt to be fair when you're dealing with tribalism on both sides. I mean, I feel like I still get this, you know, paid by Tony Khan thing. And it's
I've
funny.
See the receipt.
Like, if you listen to the shows, like, I'm so much more bullish on WWE than AEW. And by the way, being bullish on WWE now, also, it's the same deal. The tribalism, the anti-WWE, it's like, oh my God. How does he like this or that? It's like, I'm trying to tell you honestly what I think. What I think about how WWE has been, Raw, SmackDown, how I think Dynamite and Collision, the positives, the negatives. I try to be, I don't even like the word fair. I'm not even trying to be, the word I'm looking for is like honest. I'm just trying to tell you what I really think about everything. And no matter what my honest thought is, whatever side you're on in this tribalism, it's like, oh, well, it's, you know, he's paid by Tony Khan or, you know, whatever. It's just, it's so hard. It's, I don't understand. You know, it's funny because like wrestling fans, you always see those people that go, you should just like all wrestling. And it's like, you're actually the worst. You people are the worst. It's not that we should like all wrestling. It's like, we should like good wrestling and we should dislike bad wrestling. And it doesn't matter what company it's in. Is it, what is it? Is it good or is it bad? I don't know.
So you have a lot of contacts across wrestling and, you know, we're nowhere near that level, but something that we often struggle with is when we are kind of told things that are kind of going on, that it can influence how you see the product on screen. Is that something that you have to contend with or something that you think influences your coverage at times?
Well, you know, it's funny because I don't remember what I was mad about, but you know, I said something and then this big long thread started on the board and it's like nobody understood what I was talking about. And it was getting very, very clear to me. And so finally I wrote this long paragraph. And I just explained like everything that was going on that made me upset about it. And all of a sudden everyone was like, I did not know that. Why have you never said that before? Wow. And it just totally blew my mind because I felt like I'd been saying this stuff for months. And it was like, did I not say it? Was it just something I'd been told that I was just baffled that I wrote all of this, which I thought was such common knowledge based on reviews of the shows I'd done, et cetera. But it was like everybody was hearing it for the first time. So, yeah, I hear stuff every single day throughout the day. And I don't want to say it influences so much what I think about the show, but it certainly gives me a much better understanding of why things happened on the show. You know, people's frustrations, you know, I feel that that's more what I get out of this knowledge as opposed to like, okay, well, I heard this. So now I look at the show differently. I don't know what I'm really trying to say other than it does make me look at the shows completely differently, but I don't think it so much influences my thought on a show, if that makes sense.
Okay. Do you want to go? I'll go.
No, okay. You go. I'm.
You're all good. So we've seen a real kind of increase in content creators in recent years. And whilst that, you know, that diversifies the offering, there's also, there's kind of a weird juxtaposition between kind of TikTok news, you know, as you talked about earlier, kind of scoops and being there first, and kind of deep dives, data and analysis, which is, you know, was kind of what we focus on. You know, you've recently announced a price increase for The Observer. What do you think your unique selling points are that will keep the audience with you with this? And is there anything you're looking to do to diversify your offering going forward?
Well, I hope I don't get in trouble by talking about the fact of the matter is, it was a very painful decision to raise the price. But, you know, when we started the site in 2005, it was $5.99. And, you know, over the years, we raised the price every, you know, 4 or 5 years or whatever. And what we did was not increase the price for current subscribers. So if you were paying $5.99 in 2005, it is now 2024, and you're still paying $5.99. And the issue is that at the time, it felt like this is the right thing to do. You know, we're going to be, you know, to our subscribers, we're raising the price for new people, but like, we're going to keep you at this. And I always like to look long term, but I never thought in 2024, this guy's going to be paying $5.99 a month. And if you look at, like, you know, everyone's like, well, it's not that much to run a website. Well, actually, you could say that about certain websites, but like, I mean, there's our bills for this website, whether it be, you know, paying hosts, paying the writers, you know, and I don't even know everything that goes into the back end. That's not my deal, but like, we can't afford to have people be paying $5.99, and it sucks. So, you know, we had to make the decision, okay, well, you know, we've got to raise it. We're going to raise, the actual price was $12.99. So we raised it $2, and I don't think we've raised the price in 4 or 5 years. So we raised it $2, but like, for a lot of people, it's like, well, for me, it got raised $5 because I was paying $9.99. So, you know, a lot of people are upset, and, you know, I don't like to see that, but it's, you know, I don't want to say like, oh, we would have gone out of business if we didn't raise prices. But with each passing year, it gets more and more difficult. And I don't want to be laying off people. I don't want people to, you know, hey, we can't pay you anymore. I want people to be able to get paid. I want this thing to work. And, you know, when we made the announcement, our big mistake was saying, I can't remember what it said in the email, but it was something like, we'll bring you further enhancements or whatever. And everybody jumped on like, well, what are they? Well, the reason I have not said what the enhancements are is because some of them are a ways down the road. And it's not a situation where, well, you know, we can create this new board and then raise prices. It's like, we got a lot of things. And a lot of it is not even stuff that people will notice. But we have some back-end technology that we've been using since 2005, and we can't use it anymore. And in order to move into 2024, I mean, we're talking a significant outlay of cash. And it's not something that we can do without a price increase. Now, everybody afterwards, I read every single comment in that thread from people upset. And, you know, there were some obviously that were not in good faith, but there were a lot that were in good faith. And so, you know, a lot of people were saying, well, what about, you know, tiers? What about this? What about that? So, and then we had a big thing about, hey, what about Apple Podcasts? You know, you can't do Apple Podcasts. I wish I could get them on Apple Podcasts, et cetera. So what we are planning, at least at this point, is instead of having tiers on the website, the main site is $14.99, and it'll be, you know, the website, the archives of the radio shows, archives of the newsletters, et cetera. And then the video site, if you only want the video podcast, $9.99 on YouTube. And we are also going to open up Apple Podcast subscriptions for the podcasts. And so if you only want the podcasts, if you only listen to the shows, you don't care about anything else, $9.99 a month, or you can do $99 for a year. And so you'll be getting it for $8. You can get all the podcasts or whatever. So that thing just came about because of, you know, what people were upset about. So we can't just, like, if you're a subscriber to the main site, the way that Apple protects their podcast, we can't just allow you to use the Apple Podcast app because it's ridiculously simple to pirate all those shows. So we're going to open up a different option. If people really want to use Apple Podcasts and that's all they care about is a podcast, they'll have that option and it'll be significantly cheaper than the main site. But it's all, like, I know people think, you know, it's all about greed. It's all about whatever. I mean, it's not. We're doing our best. We want this thing to survive. We want people who are making, you know, a living to be able to continue making a living, not lay people off. It sucks, but I mean, it had to be done.
A couple more just before you go, because we know you're always time pressed. You're just as busy as my schedule, unfortunately. So in terms of wrestling media going forward, you know, how do you see the future?
I don't know, but I will be perfectly honest with that. I just don't know. I mean, you know, wrestling is here for the foreseeable future, and WWE is not going anywhere. I expect AEW to get, you know, a solid deal, and they're not going anywhere. And, you know, it's very popular now amongst, you know, particularly TNA with the sickos or whatever Tony calls them. You know, they're very passionate and loyal. And, you know, WWE is it legitimately in the middle of a boom period. This is their third major boom period, the Hulkamania, Attitude Era, and now this one. And so, you know, there's no danger of wrestling going away. And so, you know, the big question is, well, how do we navigate? What do people want? What do people want? I mean, a lot of younger viewers are not into the idea of, hey, I should be paying for my podcast. Hey, I should be paying for this news. I should be paying for a board. Although I have heard people say all of a sudden that the board is like a great value because the rest of social media is so horrible. But, like, they actually would pay for just the board, which nobody has ever said before. But yeah, it's going to be, I mean, my thought is, yeah, there may be a lot of people that don't want to start becoming observer subscribers. They just don't want to read 40,000 words every week. But there always will be people who will love that. There will always be people that will love listening to podcasts and listening to people talk about wrestling. And really our job is to, you know, not, you know, have great content for aggregation or whatever. But to me, it's about, let's just do the best we can. The best we can. If there's going to be, you know, wrestling journalism, let's do it the best we can and hope that even 10 years from now, even if it's a small number of people paying $99 a month, there are people that will support some wrestling journalism. So I can't tell you what's going to happen tomorrow, much less 5 years from now.
You've been doing this for a long time. Do you still have fun? Is it still fun?
Well, it depends on the day. Yes, I still really enjoy doing this. Obviously, it's, you know, it's like any job. You know, every time, you know, sometimes I get angry or frustrated about something and people are like, you're covering wrestling and making money. Like, how could anything be? It's like any job. You know, the people that yell about that, it's like, well, what's your job? You know, whatever it is, somebody wishes they had your job. It's just the way it is. You get frustrated about something at your job. There's probably somebody else goes, I'd do anything for that job. You know, it's like, it's a job. There's cool things. There's things that aren't so cool. There's, you know, positives, negatives. And, you know, I mostly enjoy it. There's times when it gets frustrating, get angry, but in general, I'm very grateful to be doing it.
Do it. You're laughing at me.
All right. So this is our silly final question that we're going to throw at you. And this is something that comes at us from our sister podcast, Tunnel Talk, where they talk about this all the time. If you're not familiar with the concept of your special guy, it's your wrestler, and it could be a man or a woman who you are sort of mildly irrational about. You know,
oh,
I'll use...
You know, oh, you no, do. Go okay. ahead. Everyone has one, but go ahead. Who's yours?
It was mine. Oh, mine is Chuck Taylor. He should have a half an hour television every week. I understand that it wouldn't be a huge ratings draw, but it would be absolutely. I would literally watch a half an hour of that man watching the Sixers. Do you have a special person, Guy? And who is that person, if you feel comfortable sharing that with us?
You know, amazingly, I've asked a million people this question and I've never thought about it. But usually the question is like, everybody seems to have some total rando that got him into wrestling. You know, it's never like, oh, I was a real big fan of the Macho Man. It's always like, well, you know, that Sika. You know, I mentioned Sika because he just passed away. But, you know, like of all of the wrestlers in the 80s, like Sika was the one, you know, with Kamala that got you into wrestling. But, you know, I wish you would have told me this question before. Because really, I don't have one. I mean, and you know what? It's funny as it is, if I did, it changes on a regular basis. Like if you ask me today, the name that would pop into my head is Mark Briscoe. And that could change next week. But Mark Briscoe, like, no matter what's going on in my day, I can think of a Mark Briscoe promo and I've got a giant smile on my face. And I love the guy. So he'll be my answer.
That's a really, really good one.
Perfect.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed the discussion as much as we have. Is there anything else you want to add just before you go? Anything you want to plug?
No, not really. WrestlingObserver.com. I think everyone hopefully knows that one. If not, that's a good website, I hear. And, you know, after this thing goes up and everybody gets mad about it, maybe we can do a follow-up and I can address all that.
Anytime. You're welcome anytime you want to stop by and air any happiness or grievances.
Thank you.
Thank you for putting up with us. All right.
So this has been the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast today with the wonderful Brian Alvarez. We are part of the Social Suplex Network. You can find all their great podcasts on their website. Please listen to all our sister pod and brother podcasts. We say sister and brother?
Yeah, I think
so. Sister and brother. Sister and brother podcast. You can also join the Social Suplex Discord where you can ask any questions you wish. Abuse me for my support of Tetsuya Naito, seeing as a Forbidden Door weekend, because that is my special little guy, as everyone is aware. And you can also contact us by email at trishandsarahpod@gmail.com, trishandsarahpod@gmail.com. Also find us on Twitter at trishandsarah. And we will be back shortly after Forbidden Door with some follow-up content. So you are, unfortunately, putting up with us 3 times in 1 week. What in the world is happening? So until then, I've been Trish.
I've been Sarah.
And this has been the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast. Thank you for listening.